Today is the 28th of March. The retreat will be formally finishing the morning of the 31st. So, just two or three more days. So it's very natural for the mind to sketch out a future, what we've got to do. Make a list. What I want to do, what I don't want to do, where I'm going, why I'm staying. Here at Amaravati, plans for the preparations of Lumpur Sumato's 90th birthday celebrations in May. Lots to do, many people coming. People arriving, people leaving, lists to make, meetings to have, duties to be picked up, avoided, taken hold of. So much to do. People who've been staying here, helping out through the winter, going off to different places, back to home, other locations, different activities, jobs, relationships. The mind creates an image of the future and fills it in. What I'm going to do next week, when I leave on Sunday, then, and then, and then. As long as the heart is tied to time, to a remembered past and an imagined future, then it's tied to birth and death. It's creating the causes of suffering. It's a direct connection. If the mind believes in past and future and adheres to that, that's creating causes of dukkha. Our list of things to do, our plans, our responsibilities, our worries, our excitements, all of it. The degree to which the mind invests in all of that as solid and absolute and real, a future that is going to happen, that I have to do something at that time, right there, there's dukkha being caused. Attachment to time, identity, location, decision making. All of this creates dukkha. These are the causes of dukkha. It can seem so ordinary and so matter of fact, so familiar. This is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to realize enlightenment, because unenlightenment is so ordinary, so natural, so familiar. Me, time, place, me making choices, doing this, not doing that, me in charge of things, me following things, all so ordinary, so familiar. So to go against the stream, to no longer create the causes of dukkha, but to create the causes of realization, of awakening, then there's the necessity to go directly against that. You're not an Ajahn. You're not a woman, not a man. You're not in the world of time. You're not a person. You're not responsible. You're not to blame. These are not fixed and absolute realities. These are roles that we pick up according to convention. Being an anagarika, a silatara, a bhikkhu, a layperson, a woman, a man, long-term lay resident, winter retreat support team, guest of the sangha, child, parent, sister, brother. These can only be samuti satya, conventional truths. They're not real, they're not absolute. They can't be. the more that the mind takes them to be absolute, it creates the causes of dukkha. The more that it awakens to those habits and knows them, doesn't believe into them, doesn't believe in them, doesn't buy into them, then dukkha is no longer being caused. The mind is planting the causes instead for awakening, for liberation. So with the calendar saying 28th of March, and conventionally speaking, only two or three days of our winter retreat time left, this is the ideal opportunity to swim against the stream, to go against that powerful current of becoming. My list of things to do. The meetings I have to go to, the places I need to travel to, the people to talk with, the stuff that has to happen. To meet that, to know that, and to challenge it. To ask, is that so? I have to do this. Is that so? I am this. Is that so? I will be going there. Is that so? It needs to happen this way. Is that so? I'm definitely going to be involved in that. Is that so? Now, shifting the attitude in this way, it's not an annihilation or rejection of the world of people and things, but it's putting them into the perspective of reality, of Dhamma itself. A simple practice that Lumpo Cha would encourage of just asking that question, is that so? With every plan, every gesture, every intention, is that so? Even in the present moment experience, what I'm going to do after the bell goes, 9:30, when the sitting's over, I will you? Who's sure they're going to live that long? A blood vessel bursts in our brain and over we go and that's it. You don't hear the bell at the end of the sitting. When that habit of becoming is challenged, those judgments, those plans, the excitements, the anxieties, just by asking that question, is that so? Is that a sure thing? Watch what happens in the heart. Look, feel the effect of that. We look at the list of things to do today. What's planned for next week? Just to look at it, feel it, and say, is that so? Is that a sure thing? Is that a fixed reality? And as soon as the question is asked, the heart knows, no, of course. How could it be fixed? Sabbe sankhara anicca. All conditioned things are uncertain, transient, fluid. So the point of bringing this kind of question to mind, to ask, is that so? Is that a sure thing? Is the change of heart that it brings about? If there's wisdom, if there's sufficient awareness, then when that question is asked, is that a sure thing? Then the result is a quality of spaciousness, peacefulness. Bhava nirodho nibbanam. The cessation of becoming is nibbana, peacefulness. If there isn't sufficient awareness, mindfulness and wisdom, then when that question is asked, is that a sure thing? Then immediately self-view kicks in and tries to make a case to make sure that it does happen that way or it doesn't happen that way, or we get things to go the way we like, or we get our name definitely on this and away from that. that ego-centered reactions can easily kick in. Wanting to make sure it goes the way we like and doesn't go the way we don't like. Self-view meets uncertainty with fear, with a plan, with a belief, filling up the unknown with a hope or a scheme, a worry. Agitation and concern about things not going the way I like and going the way I don't like, what I will have to do, what I won't be able to do. These are the habits of self-centered thinking, sakkaya ditti. If that's what kicks in, then notice that. Like, wow, look at that reaction. Me desperate to make sure that A happens and B doesn't. Oh, wow. And the mind that knows, well, that's a strong reaction, is not caught in it. It knows this is a reaction. So that's where mindfulness wisdom is established. But the more consistent and energetic, powerful the quality of awareness is, then the more immediate the response to that kind of reflection of asking, is that so? Is that a sure thing? If there's that quality of wisdom, awareness, that's well established, strong, powerful, then immediately there's relief. There's the insight, of course. Of course, how could it be otherwise? And there's a natural cheerfulness and ease. You find yourself laughing at your own excitements, your own anxieties, your own irritations, your own grumbling. Like, how can he do that? That's ridiculous. I'm going to set him straight. Like, oh, that's great. That's so good. I want to make sure I'm part of that. I want to go there. We find ourselves laughing at our own excitements and desperations, our own judgments and the biases of our mind seem ridiculous in the face of wisdom. And even a shorter, an even briefer kind of reflection that Lumpur Cha would encourage, which is equally effective and equally liberating, is whenever the mind makes a judgment, not just around things that we expect to do in the future, but judgments about what we call ugly or beautiful, right or wrong, mine or yours, getting what we like, not getting what we don't like. Simply to say, so, this is really wonderful. So, this is awful. So, this is exactly how it should be. So, she's a really difficult person. So, she's really inspiring. So, that's how monks should be. So, that's exactly how monks shouldn't be. So, and this isn't voiced with an attitude of dismissal or aversion or kind of a sort of snobbish superiority. Putting your own habits of self-view into a superior position, but coming from a place of clarity and wisdom, awareness, it's opening up the fact that every judgment can only be partial. When we say, that's beautiful, that can only be from one perspective. What I call beautiful and inspiring, somebody else can see it and go, oh, that's terrible. Don't you realize what that means? No, it means that's a beautiful thing to me. Every judgment that the mind makes can only be partially true, partially real, partially valid. And when we make that statement, so, that kind of a question, it's bursting the bubble of our presumptions around every judgment, every plan, opinions of ourselves, opinions of the world around us, the political arena, our families, people that we live with, people that we work with. If it's coming from a place of clarity and wisdom, then it reveals those limited subjective natures of every kind of judgment, every plan, every opinion. This is exactly what I didn't want to happen. So, yes, this is exactly how I wanted it to go. So, and when that's applied, once again, notice the change of heart. What happens in the citta when that reflection is applied? There's a spaciousness, simplicity, a peacefulness. There's a balancing, a sense of integration, orderliness of reality, of nature, becomes apparent. This is exactly what I didn't want to happen. So, this is exactly what I was looking for. So, notice that change. The shift in the heart that recognizes, oh, of course, just that. Ah, this is the way it is. So in that moment, in this present realization, there's that taste of suchness, ta-ta-ta, a quality of perfect and natural wholeness, integration. Reality is perfectly balanced, harmonious. Is exactly this way. Oh. The mind is paying attention to the present. It's attuned to the sense world of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. And when there is that quality of realization, of attunement, then we find that we're able to adapt, to work with those different sensory contacts. What we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we smell, what we taste, what we touch. And much more easily, if there's something to be done, then we can do it. If there's nothing to be done, we can leave it alone. There's no personal investment. No outcome that there's a need for the ego to feed upon. The heart is at ease, engaging if it needs to, and not engaging if it doesn't need to. Nothing is gained, nothing is lost, nothing is burdensome. There's an easefulness, naturalness in the way that this being, this life, relates to the world it's a part of. That's all. There's simplicity, orderliness, balance, and natural ease.